This week we're going to talk about metering.
Yeah, that's super nerdy.
Except in the States, it's called yarding.
Right, because of the whole metric imperial thing.
You know what? That wasn't very... I'm going to cut that. That's not very funny. You try it.
Yeah, that's true. It's not going to be funny when I say it either.
So I'm going to cut it. And then we'll try if you say it.
Okay.
We're going to do metering this week.
Yeah, that's super nerdy. In the States, they would refer to that as yarding.
You're right. It's not very funny, but I'm leaving yours in anyway.
I knew you were going to do that.
Hello and welcome to episode 62 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan, and as always, I'm in Tubing in Germany. No, wait a second. I did it again.
What?
I said, I'm supposed to just say I'm in Tubingen, and as always with me is...
Adam.
In...
That's it. In Vancouver. This is the lamest intro you've given me yet, so I'm not playing along. I'm just bitter.
Good 5-minute strike you're calling.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do the intro.
Yeah, I'm going to sit this out.
I don't blame you. That was a little bit weak, and I know better.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if you're actually introducing me there.
Yeah, well, that's Adam.
Okay.
A little bit, I get at this point, a little bit pouty, though.
Yeah, looking for a new contract.
Yeah. All right, well, drive safe. What'd you shoot this week?
Not a whole lot. Again, I've been kind of busy and haven't taken a lot of pictures. I did manage to take a few pictures on the dike near my house the other night. Beautiful sunset, which wasn't apparent to me. I was putting my kids to bed, and my daughter looked out the window, which has one of those darkening shades on it. So mm-hmm. she peeked underneath and said, "Wow, it's really red outside." And so then I looked, and there was this gorgeous red sunset. It was already like down, so this was kind of the, I don't know what you call it, the sunset aftermath. So
right.
it was beautiful. So I had never seen a red sunset in the time that I've been here that was that nice. So I rushed down in the pitch black, said, "Here you go," to my wife, "put the kids to bed. I have some pictures to take." So I rushed down and around the corner and took a few silhouette pictures, one of which will be included in the photo challenge. But that's pretty much it. I did want to mention, though, a picture I took maybe a couple weeks ago that I have not mentioned on the show, and maybe we can include it on the website, which was a unique picture I took of my son Jack playing with a balloon, where I was able to capture the reflection of the balloon in his eyes. So the entire catch light, which occupies both pupils, is a green balloon.
I've seen it. Looks good.
Pretty cool. And again, that went along with our whole episode that was to do with bounce boards. So I was bouncing light off of one of those big silver aluminum foil homemade bounce sheets up into a balloon, got it at the right angle, and then it actually showed up in both eyes. So
nice.
I thought I was pretty proud of myself. Not that I went around with that intention, but after I saw it showing up, I fiddled around trying to get it just right.
Well, if you put it on the server, I will put it on the in the show notes.
Yeah, I will. Now I'm just going to start taking reflected images of everything in the eye. So I want to see what else I can do there.
No, it looks great. We should point out that it is absolutely positively not Photoshopped.
No, 100% just lucky.
Looks like it is, but no, it looks fantastic. It's a good one.
And great. That's it.
And I saw some of your Victoria pictures too.
Yeah, what did you have to say?
Good, they look great. I mean, I used to live in Victoria, so it's nice to see, and pictures look great.
Yeah, there's a cool pier for anybody who goes and visits in Victoria. It's not right in Victoria, in Sydney, which is very close to Victoria,
mm-hmm.
Sydney, BC, Sydney by the Sea. There is a great long pier that extends, I don't know, probably 100 meters out in their little harbor there, and took some pictures on the pier. And so
isn't there two, like one short one going and then one longer one?
There is a shorter one where there's a restaurant kind of right on the edge.
Yep.
And then there's the long pier. So there is kind of, but I think the shorter one is a private one. So I don't think you're actually allowed to go out on that one.
I shot part of my final film for film school on that pier.
Oh yeah?
Yep.
It is pretty neat. And it extends right out, and we had kind of an overcast day, so didn't get exactly the brilliant background that I would have liked. But I can imagine, you know, in a nice sunset or on a nice clear day, because you know it faces the mountains, so you get just the fantastic backdrop there that would be possible if you had the right climate conditions.
It's a good spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it for me. What about yourself?
My buddy Steve was in town. So we took he's a photo enthusiast.
Like myself?
He's like yourself, yep. So he was in town. He actually has the same camera as you, or maybe the T3i, I think.
Okay.
But so he was using that, and we went for a little photo walk around old Tübingen.
Does that mean you walked around and took pictures?
That's what it meant. Yeah,
try to make it sound like more than what it is.
Well, photo walk is something that people do.
We went for a walk and took pictures. That's what I would call it.
Uh-huh. We snapped photos of our walk.
Right. Yep. Okay.
I'm trying to create what we call in the podcast world as a word picture.
Right. You're doing an excellent job.
No, we walked around specifically to go take pictures, and so he was shooting that with his 11-16mm Tokina lens.
Okay,
so the
did
super
you try
wide.
That out?
I tried it out a little bit. Yeah, it's kind of fun, but he was trying to take some people pictures with that. That's tough. That's tough to do.
Yeah, that's more of a landscape type of shot with that lens.
Which he took those as well, but when he's trying to snap, and especially when I'm the people, I don't like that too much.
No. So you end up looking distorted? Is that the reason?
Yes. Yes.
Worse
everybody
than you
does.
Normally look.
Exactly. Right. That's the key there, is it's way worse than normal. So, so we went and shot some of that. I snapped some two-minute portraits of him. Have you ever done that? Like you just say, I'm going to snap a portrait in like under 2 minutes?
And do you set a watch to this or something?
Well, no, it's not really like a hard fit. It's not like Olympic trials or anything.
Right. No, I've never set a watch on it. I think most of my portraits are two-minute portraits.
Okay. Yeah. I meant like from setting up the lights and bam, hit the portrait, just go, and then done. Like snap
three. That's my life, buddy, when I shoot a portrait.
I guess.
Because I have a 3-year-old and a two-year-old and a 4-year-old. That is portraits.
I can't guarantee Steve's attention span was any longer. Yeah.
All right, then.
And then we went for, he and I went and met up with Chris Marquardt, whose name I just keep dropping on the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you make sure. It's like a token. There's got to be, if there's a drinking game for Marquardt count, whenever you say Chris Marquardt, and you have to say the whole thing, then people are just getting loaded listening to our show.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's all right. I never say it because I think I'll mispronounce it.
We've been hanging out a lot lately. I can't help it.
Well, that's cool. Hey,
so
man, you're important. You're an important person.
Yeah, well, then we drove down to Clooney's place, and we met Pitt down there. And we played some poker. And
who are you with again?
My buddy Steve.
Okay, but who is the other guy you were with, the photographer guy?
Oh, Brad Pitt.
No, no. The other guy, his name starts with Chris.
I'm not saying his name.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyways, but we went out hit a few pubs in Tübingen, did a bunch of night photos for fun. Steve brought his camera as well, and I think he just wanted some free tips.
Okay, and did you give him?
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah,
Chris and I, and so it was like a big podcaster summit.
Yeah, meeting of great minds.
We put all of our listeners into a pile and split it. It was good.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I shot. Other than that, nothing.
All right.
All right. Before we get to the photo challenge or something I want to talk about, I meant to talk about like months ago.
Okay.
When we were in the swimming pool back in Vancouver there.
Yeah.
Going out to try to make this short. Going to go swimming, see a sign on the bulletin board basically saying reward for lost camera.
Okay.
So somebody evidently had brought their camera. This is in you know, December or January, right?
Yeah.
Someone had brought their camera to the pool and had it stolen out of their bag.
Okay, yeah.
Which, never fun. Like, yeah. I don't like bringing my camera to the pool, but sometimes, you know, you want pictures of you and your kids swimming and stuff like that. What choice do you have?
Right. No, I'm still with you.
Just bring your point and shoot. But that's not the part of the story that got me, because that happens. The part that said was basically the plea at the end was that I really need this camera back because I have all my vacation pictures from the summer and like the previous spring, and I have all these pictures I can't get back, so I kind of need this. And I thought, I feel bad for her, but why didn't you clean the images off your card?
Right.
So that's my little extra tip for the day. Be vigilant about copying the pictures off of your card.
I am. I'm good with that. I never leave the pictures on my card.
I don't think I go out a second time. I sometimes forget to clean them off my card. Like, I've copied them to my computer, but sometimes right. forget to delete them.
Yeah.
Which I hate. But never, ever, whenever I come home, what's one of the first things I do is fire those on the computer.
I agree. I'm exactly the same way. That's the first thing I do, especially if I know for sure that I've got something decent. If the picture's on there, like, no big deal if I lose them, well, then I'm in no immediate rush. But most of the time, that's the first thing I do.
Yep. I mean, for that reason is a good enough reason alone. And then, again, my buddy Steve, who was here from Australia, he brought all his cards, and they were all jammed full of right. video he'd shot 3 months ago and hadn't copied yet. And so he had, like, no room to shoot new pictures.
Right.
So,
did he do? More cards?
No. He ended up copying them to his work computer, and he'll probably, you know, sort them out later. But like everybody else, you don't sort them out later.
Yeah.
You kind of put them in that temp folder, and then you create temp folder 2, and then temp folder 3, and so on.
Right.
So don't do it. Be vigilant. Copy them off there.
Okay. Good tip.
Other thing I wanted to mention is, I did not know, did you know, you didn't know this, that in iTunes, when people write reviews for the podcast,
right,
that there are multiple iTunes stores around the world.
It makes sense. I don't read any of this stuff, so no, I was not aware.
I came across it by accident because, long story, but if reviews only go in the relevant country's stores.
Okay.
So it turns out we've actually had quite a few positive reviews from around the world, and so I just wanted to acknowledge that and say thanks, and I wasn't ignoring
you. Yeah, you sent me some of those, and I read them, and I also say thank you. Yep. All so positive. All the ones you sent me were positive anyway.
I just don't know how my dad logged into the Romanian store and wrote such a nice review.
Yeah. Well, he's clever like that.
Yeah. So there's that. Canon released their new camera this week, last week, whenever it was.
That was the Mach 3, right?
Canon 5D Mark III just came out. People have been waiting for it for quite some time.
I said Mach 3, like a super fast jet.
Yes, I was just going to smooth over it and not correct you.
Yeah, no, I meant Mark III, but it just came out Mach 3, like the razor.
You're thinking about razors, yeah.
Yeah, I need a shave, I guess.
Any thoughts on the Mark III?
I haven't looked at all the specs or anything. This is kind of a little bit... I try not to look at stuff that I know I can't afford to buy right now.
Well, I think that goes for everybody on this one.
Yeah, so I really haven't looked at it seriously. And because I just got a new camera, again, I'm not even considering myself in the market. So I did not look, but tell us about it.
You're not that guy? You don't like to look around and just tease yourself?
Sometimes. More with lenses, to be honest, than camera bodies. So.
Oh, yeah? As I got engaged to my wife, I just kept going to the singles bars to be like, man, what else is there?
Yes, right. What am I missing right now?
Exactly. That's exactly how I do it. Yeah. A lot of people were anticipating this, and I wasn't expecting too much myself, because Canon just released a dedicated video camera a few months ago.
Okay.
And I would be very surprised if they brought a lot of that technology into the Canon 5D range for much, much cheaper. So it would really cannibalize their high-end sales.
Okay, so what's new and improved about the Mark III?
I think it's, in my estimation, it's very little. It's a little bit faster. Instead of shooting 4 frames per second, I think it shoots 6 frames.
Okay.
It's got more autofocus points. I think it's probably a much faster autofocus. It has probably a slightly faster processor. Street images get processed quicker. Video, this is the part that where it really falls apart for me. I was hoping for much improved, like the Jell-O effect.
Right.
I was hoping that was going to be a big jump leap forward, and apparently it's not. And it doesn't shoot 60 frames per second at full resolution, which is kind of surprising. So
okay, so a lot of people, you're going to take a pass on this.
A lot of people like myself are going to hang on tight to their Mark IIs.
And how much? What's the cost on one of these?
I think it's around $3,500.
Okay, so it's a big price jump too.
It is a big price jump, and that's why when like a couple of years ago when I was going to buy my 5D and I was on the fence about it, like, geez, should I get it? It's a lot of money. The price had gone from $3,000 down to $2,400. And my justification at the time was because the Mark III was due then, like that was a year and a half ago. Everyone was sort of expecting it. And so my justification was, well, if the new one comes out, it's going to be much more expensive. And what will I get for that money? And what about all the pictures I'm missing now?
Right.
So I jumped on it. And then about a year later, it went a full year later, and it dropped even more down to $2,000. And people thought, oh, wow, like that means the Mark III's coming. So a lot of people were holding on thinking, I want that new camera. But I think I would still, even now, I would spend way less and get the Mark II.
Right.
It's just that good. So.
Well, and it's basically close to half the price, right?
It's, yeah. Well, $2,400 to $3,500, I think, is about
$2,000. You just said, right?
I think it went back up again, though.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah, that was a rebate
limited
program.
Time.
So in Canada, I think it's $3,700 for the 5D in Canada.
Okay.
So $2,400 to $3,700, you know, $1,300. It's righteous bucks.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
So it definitely is. I mean, it is, you know, going to be a great camera. I don't think it made the leaps that a lot of people were hoping for. So. There you go.
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up.
Photo challenge. No
right.
Look.
What was it again?
It was the no look pass.
Right. What does that mean exactly?
Well, you know how you and me and everybody else in the whole digital camera world, as soon as they take a picture, looks at the screen immediately?
Right.
Almost immediately. I wanted to not do that. That's it. So we're going to take
That's
a picture.
It.
Was
the,
that the only
end.
Was that the only part of the challenge? Was
no,
to that?
Wasn't it supposed to be a spot meter?
Yes, I did it in spot meter. I think that was part of the challenge as well.
I think it was. You said we had, I think that was the initial part of it. It was to do spot metering, use spot metering.
Right.
And you were going to choose a difficult situation, which you said, you know, I'm going to choose difficult situation, use spot metering and the no look.
Yes. And that's what we did.
Okay, so...
So the whole point
first.
Of that is the whole point of that is to sort of take over the image making in your camera and not let the camera do all the work. Like you
right.
want to drive the car.
Right.
So let's look at mine first. I think yours is better.
I agree. Mine is much better.
Just kidding.
Better.
Mine, I got to tell you, mine's pretty cool, well exposed and all that, but yours is actually just a better picture of things.
Wow, and right up front, even before we talk about it, so, okay.
I don't live on the ocean, so...
Yeah.
Bit of a handicap.
Yeah. Tell us about your picture.
Well, I purposely chose this. I went out, this is a few days ago, and I went out and decided just that this was my whole purpose, was to go out on a photo walk, just for the purpose of taking a picture for the challenge.
Right.
So I went out and on a, it wasn't too bad of a day. It was slightly overcast, but the sun was coming in and out of the clouds. So it was kind of, you know, constantly changing.
Right.
But it wasn't too bad. And, yeah.
What else can you tell us about that day? What'd you eat for breakfast?
I had my normal muesli.
Okay, just move along.
So before I left, though, I don't think I mentioned this to you. I turned my LCD screen off.
Right.
Did you do that?
No, I didn't do that.
Okay.
I didn't look, but I didn't turn it off.
I knew you didn't look. I knew you weren't a looker. But yeah. No, I went in and under the review time in the menu, it's called review time. You can just set that to 0 seconds. And basically that the images don't show up at all.
Right.
Which if you're in tight for battery, like if your battery's getting really low and you are out of luck, turn that off. That's a good battery saver.
Okay.
So that's what I did. I wanted to go out and I only shot about 10 or 12 pictures total. Like I would shoot this, like I shoot the picture of a scene and then move on.
Yeah.
I wouldn't fire away. I only shot one of each. And ended up only shooting 10 or 12 or something like that. So this is the one I picked. I knew right away as soon as I shot it, I knew this was going to be the one.
So tell us a little bit about the exposure. What are you shooting this at?
The numbers, I don't remember.
Ballpark.
ISO 320, F4, shutter speed, something, one over something.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, that's a fraction.
Yeah. A fraction of something.
Yeah, it was a fraction of a second. No, but what I did was I purposely chose a difficult scenario with lots of blacks in it, the sun kind of coming in with a glow there, and the bright white sign.
Right.
So that we have a broad spectrum of light that normally, if you're going to use the regular metering mode, something's not going to be right. Like, it's probably not going to expose it in this way. And in this case, we can still see the whites. The whites aren't overexposed,
right?
And the shadows aren't underexposed.
No, it all looks pretty good. So what are you metering off of?
I metered off. Okay, with spot metering, what I did was I basically metered off the white of the sign.
Okay, that was my guess. Yep.
And I basically brought that a third of a stop back from overexposed.
So are you under now? Are we talking?
I expose for the sign, but I don't expose for the sign in the middle. I decide that the sign is going to be two stops over the middle.
Two stops over the middle.
Yeah. Okay. So if you get to the right, if you look like in the Canon and on the Nikon, it's the opposite. It's the left hand side, or maybe in the Canon it's the opposite. I don't know. But point being is to the right. With your exposure in the Nikon, you'll see it goes up to the end, and then basically your whites will go overexposed.
Right. Yeah. In the Canon, it would go to the right. Whites would be overexposed going to the right. Yeah.
So I basically set my white point, the white sign, to exist at one third of a click left of the far right side.
Okay.
So I don't point my camera at the white and tell it, okay, make that be zero. I make that be plus two.
Okay.
And then before I snap the picture, I then turn the camera and point it at something dark in the scene. So like the black fence, or I think that's what I used was the darker part of the fence, the gate. And I make sure that still exists on the meter.
Right.
So if it's gone way to the left past minus two, you're going to have trouble seeing into those shadows.
Yeah.
So in this case, that didn't happen. So I knew I'd be able to see the entire range, and therefore the exposure would be right where I wanted it.
Okay.
So that's it. Other than that, it's self-explanatory.
It says Einfart.
Einfart Freihalten.
What is that all about?
It basically means entrance, so keep it clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I think that is. That's all we need to hear. I don't want to ask you any questions because I don't want to hear you talk anymore.
Okay.
All right. That's it. The end. Can we talk about mine?
Yes.
Did that come off too harsh? Your feelings hurt?
No.
Okay, good. So my picture, like I was explaining, my daughter, you know, was identified a very nice red sunset, so I rushed down the road and tried to catch a people cycle and jog along the dike, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I basically rushed out there. It was ridiculously dark, and I metered off of the red low level sunset, and I wanted, in order to get a silhouette that looked like a silhouette, I had to shoot low to high, which basically negated the fact that the mountains looked amazing. But when I shot level, I was basically just would have upper bodies, so it didn't look like anything.
Right.
So therefore, I got low and shot up and got the angle, which I really like the angle. You only get a little bit of the red sunset at the bottom, but that's what I used to meter off of.
And hey, so before you get there, you didn't know these people?
No, this was just, this was creepy guy, you know, it was super black. And this is the move that I used, is that I was taking pictures of the sunset knowing that they were going to run into my field of view. And I was there first snapping pictures. So if they happened to cross my field of view, then hey, that's their fault, not mine. So
that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So
also it's important to put your camera down right away after taking the picture. That way, when they tase you, you don't drop it.
So, yeah, that was the move. It's like, hey, I'm just here taking pictures of my sunset. I don't see you coming. If you happen to go in there, then your picture gets taken. It was so dark. I mean, I'm pretty sure they recognized that anything that I was taking a picture of was never going to be identifiable as anybody in particular.
Right.
So there you go. So I basically ended up with an ISO of 1600, and I think I was an aperture of 2.0 or a 2.2, really wide open, because there was so little light and I needed a shutter speed that was, I think I ended up with a shutter speed of about 1/160th of a second, because I didn't want it to completely get blurred, especially as the cyclists went by.
Right.
So, and I didn't want to go any higher on the ISO because it's already grainy at 1600. So mm-hmm. that's where I wound up. So I metered off of the red and I knew with a silhouette I was going to have to go way under in order to get kind of a nice rich color.
Okay.
So I ended up with, I think, 1 2/3 of a stop under when I was exposing for the red.
Oh,
and
wow.
I took obviously different people zip by, and again, because I wasn't looking, I didn't know if I was going to be right how much under, because I had no frame of reference doing it this way.
Okay.
And so I took a couple here as they went by at that exposure, and then I took a couple of cyclists at one under, and I liked the colors looked better when I went a little more under, metering off of the red.
So once you went and shot the challenge pictures, did you then flip it into regular mode and shoot a bunch of safety pictures?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Really?
I was so dark. I knew I didn't even know if I was going to be able to use anything here, because I had some backup challenge photos that I had taken a couple days earlier. Nothing special, but kind of a difficult lighting situations. And I figured I just went out here because it was a red sunset, and I thought, hey, I'll just take a few. And I knew there was very little light, so I thought, oh, I have about 5 minutes to do this, and if I get something, I get something. But I didn't take any safety pictures.
No, this looks fantastic. So I like where you put the, I like where you accidentally, according to you, put the horizon.
Yeah.
Down low like that looks fantastic. I think it's better than having the mountains there.
Yeah. It didn't look right the other way.
I feel like you could sell this to one of the running stores.
I see and this was the lucky part of it. What I like most about this picture is that their separation between the two people and their pose is almost identical.
Yes.
You know, like the position of their back arm, front arm, legs, like everything. Like it just, they're a complete replica, the two runners. And I just thought that was just lucky, and it just looks good, right?
And this is taken down by your house, correct?
Yeah, just a block away from my house.
Yeah. There is, it's a bold statement, but there's a good chance I know both of these people. I'm not joking you. I'm not even kidding you.
Really?
Yeah.
How can you say that?
I'm pretty confident. I'm about 50%.
There's a pack of like at least 20 runners that went by, and they all had these little hat lights and stuff. And I have other pictures that I caught, but I just like these two and where they showed up in the frame. But I had a couple others, and some of them have like glowing red armbands and stuff. So all sorts of neat light that shows up in what their attire was. So
I'm gonna send this off to the people I think it is.
And say, is this you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, go for it.
And we'll see. We'll follow up on that.
Sure.
They're both women, right?
I would. This is all I can see as much as you could see of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So they look like women I know.
I'm gonna say women. One's got a looks like a ponytail. The one with the hat light has a ponytail.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one could be a very small man.
Yeah, I doubt it.
No, it's not. I'm sure they're both women.
There you go. Well, it looks great. I think you did a great job. And is this something that you would have been able to get using your regular automatic mode or matrix metering or evaluative?
I doubt it. I think it would have. I could get it in manual, like we've done silhouettes before.
Yeah.
But I think in the regular metering, it's going to want to expose everything more. It's going to want to have the foreground show up a little bit, right?
Right. Your camera wants to have light.
Yeah.
That's what it wants, and you can achieve this by using the other methods and dialing down the AV the exposure compensation. But you would end up fiddling around, and you would likely miss the shot. Like you'd probably end up, if you got this shot, it would be like your 10th or 12th shot after you've taken a bunch of test shots and dialed it all in how you want it.
Right, and there was no time for that.
No.
The light dropped so fast by the time I got out there.
Lesson learned.
Yes.
Okay, well that leads us right into this week's topic, which is metering modes.
Can't wait, now that we already took the challenge picture.
That's it. It's kind of a little trick move I've been pulling on you.
Challenge for this week is to retake the challenge picture.
I don't think you're going to do better.
Probably not.
I think you intuitively figured out what you wanted to do. So, first of all, what do we talk about when we talk about light metering?
I don't know. This is an area that, again, was all brand new to me. So I'm guessing that people used to carry, maybe they still do carry on little light meters for this exact purpose, to get things exactly right. And I read a little bit about, you know, it has to do with neutral colors, neutral grays. Like, is that right?
First off, the real simple explanation is when you're light metering is you're taking a reading of how much light there is.
Okay.
That's the first thing. That's really all that's going on.
But in the before the digital cameras that did all this in camera, you used to carry around a meter. Is that correct?
You'd carry around a light meter. When I still have one, I they're valuable tool. So I have my old Siconic. Well, it's not even that old. It's still digital. I wish I had kind of one of the old fancy needle ones. But basically, that's what we call an incident meter, which means
it just tells you how much light is there,
how much light is falling on your subject.
Okay.
And that's it. So you basically take a reading and go, okay, great, it's a sunny day, there's this much light, therefore I'll set my camera to whatever you want to set it to.
Okay, but how does the reading that it gives you give you that calculation? Like, how do you know what you're going to get set it? Like, what's the number, or what's the figure it's going to give you?
Well, you basically plug in your ISO that you want to use. Because then you weren't using variable ISOs. You're using a fixed ISO.
Okay.
So you dial in your 100. You would basically dial in your aperture. You'd push the button. It would take a reading on the light and spit out a shutter speed for you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's essentially working the same principle as what we're doing now.
Right.
And see, back when in film school, when we shot motion picture film, we only used incident meters. And if you like, you could buy a spot meter that, you know, you see these real pro directors of photography getting down and looking through like a sniper's rifle and like just picking off tiny little bits of the scene to make sure everything's, you know, gonna expose properly.
Yeah.
And that's for when you have shiny objects or bright whites or something like that. You want to make sure that they're not going to go over. But those are for super pros. Like, I never ever used a spot meter. It's just really difficult to use well and can get confusing. But now everyone uses a spot meter. That's what's happening in your camera, is it's a spot meter.
Right.
So what it's doing, rather than measuring how much light there is, it's measuring how much light is bouncing off your subject.
Okay.
So that's what's going on now.
Yeah.
So the downside to that is that your camera, all it wants to do is whatever it's reading, make it in the middle.
Right.
So expose and make it middle gray. Make it just sort of right down Broadway. So like in your runner's picture, that's what it would have done. If you'd exposed that scene, it would have tried to bring it up, and you would not have been happy with what happened.
Right.
So there's that. So, but within that, your camera probably has, I will say, four different what we call metering modes. And basically that means how it reads the scene.
Right.
Okay. So the basic model, the basic mode that comes in, that's probably your default one, it's on the auto setting, that I use quite a lot.
Yeah.
It's called evaluative or matrix metering or whatever else. I don't know what Pentax calls it. It's got a name for it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I had been using all the way up until a week ago.
Most people do. I still do a lot because it's kind of a good all-around setting. And what that does is it looks at the whole scene. Everything the camera's looking at, it takes into consideration and just sort of evens it all out. Now, if you have lots of dark blacks and lots of bright whites, it can't even those out. Something's going to be overexposed or underexposed.
Correct.
So it's not doing any magic, not doing any HDR magic. All it's telling you is, all right, best possible scenario, F8. Boom. And then it goes.
Yeah.
So you try to make, and as you know, nothing is fun for the whole family.
Right. No.
So that's what that does. Now, it's great to use. If you get used to it, you can then quickly make changes according to your taste. Like you can look at a scene and go, all right, like if I'm out walking in the sun and I just want to just take snapshots of people, I use the evaluative metering and set it to -2/3, and that's that. And right. it does a pretty good job. So that's one of them. Okay. The other next one is called partial metering, or partial, I don't know, they have another name in there, but pretty much
Canon,
all the same.
I think says partial.
Partial? It says partial?
Yeah, I think it does.
Okay. So it basically,
or no, maybe not. Maybe my camera only has the center weighted and then the spot. And mine might only have three.
Possibly. I bet it has four, though.
Okay.
Because it's got the little difference. Oh, maybe. I'm sure yours. Anyways.
I don't know what the fourth one's called. I know the evaluative, center weighted, and spot are all there, but I'm not sure what the fourth one's called.
Well, that one's the one called partial. And it basically, rather than use the whole scene, it just reads a smaller part in the center.
And that's different than center weighted.
Yes.
Okay.
But you know what? Here, that you bring up a great point. Like the differences are so subtle that I'm not 100% sure why they both exist.
Okay.
I don't know if it's just fancy salesmanship or if people really use them. And if people really use those, hey, let us know. I'd love to hear how you use those settings. But partial essentially just shaves down how much of the scene it reads. So it assumes that you're going to know a little bit more about, what you're doing.
It is, in fact, called partial. I just pulled my camera out to look, and there is four modes, and one is called partial.
Okay.
So,
well, the next one, the next one is what we call center weighted. No, we call, that's what everyone else in the world calls it. I didn't invent that.
Right.
Now, what that does is that it uses the whole scene, but it gives priority to the center area.
Okay.
So I don't know what that means. Like it looks at the whole thing.
There's some formula in there.
I wonder if there is. And you know what? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to dedicate myself to this. I'll shoot a test sometime before next show of the exact same photo on all the four different metering modes.
Okay.
And we'll just see the difference. And then I'll post the settings too. Like, okay, in this case, the camera decided this shutter speed. And
so you would be doing that from AV mode?
I'll do it from AV mode so that I am out of it. So the camera
right.
just does it.
Okay.
Even though I don't really shoot AV mode, but for this, I'll come out of AV retirement.
Okay.
So center weighted, like let's say you're shooting a portrait of somebody who's fairly bright in the center, it'll kind of even out the whole picture and then look and go, okay, great, that's probably what they want, so we'll shift the exposure to that a little bit. which I'm sure that's how they pitched it at the tech meeting when they were designing this. They just probably had some Egbert come up there. And, yeah. So the last one of the four is what's called spot metering, or spot something else, selective spot, or I'm not sure what each camera manufacturer, I think, calls it something slightly different.
Okay.
But you get the idea. So even though the whole thing is a spot meter, essentially, spot meter takes a very, very small part of the picture, and that's right at the center. And that's all it meters. It doesn't use any of the rest of the picture. Just whatever you point your camera at is what it's taking the reading off of.
Seems like this is the easiest way to use it. If you're not going to use evaluative, to me, it makes sense to use the spot. I'm not sure my real use for the other two modes. It seems like either, okay, I know how evaluative works, and now I know how spot works, and that to me would pretty much encompass my needs.
I tend to agree. I don't use partial or center weighted. I don't like that it takes that much out of your hands. Like if it's just a smaller area, I think it's very similar to spot, but just takes into account a larger zone.
But that's the thing, is that now, you know, when you're like, as far as spot goes, you know exactly, you aim your center point on whatever it is you want the reading for, and yes, you've got it. When you're talking about partial, now you stick in the center, but you don't know whether it's reading off, in your case, the white sign or just beside that. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
And then that just seems to add a whole extra variable to complicate things.
It does. It does. So the only two I use are the evaluative and the spot.
Okay.
And spot, now, to be fair, spot can get tricky. Like, you can get into a lot of trouble using spot metering. Because you start to, if you don't really pay attention, all of a sudden parts of your scene can blow out and you can have no clue. So it's a great idea to, when you're using spot, is to, well, first of all, practice on things that aren't that important.
Like?
Well, the things that are repeatable, for one, like, you know, your kid's first steps might be a good time to go with Matrix.
Okay.
You know? And set up the iPod and a whole bunch of other stuff, too, just in case.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good opportunity to do that. But, you know, if anybody here shot film SLRs, like older film SLRs, they probably shot a tight spot meter. Like, my Canon FTB doesn't do full-frame evaluation. It doesn't do evaluative metering. It's a very tight spot. So you kind of get used to, okay, How do we use that?
Yeah.
So specifically for evaluative metering, my best tip there is get to know your camera. Get to understand how it judges exposure, and that just takes practice. And after a while, you'll get a feeling and go, okay, I know that my camera tends to overexpose in this situation, so I'm going to dial it down by 2/3 of a stop.
Yeah.
Or I know it's going to mess it up. You know, it's going to be underexposed. Therefore, I'm going to push it.
Yeah, and I think I kind of understand evaluative metering very well, because that's pretty much all I've really ever used.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see, you know, certain situations, and the situation that I think I come across a fair bit is, you know, I live in a place in the world where it's overcast a lot, so you can have a very, you know, kind of gray, bright background behind your subject, and then, you know, if you wanna get proper exposure on that person's face, it can be tricky using evaluative, where it's taking a reading off of the whole scene, much of what is quite bright behind them.
Right.
And so the spot metering is a quick way to set that on their face. If you know what the exposure that you want on their face is, then okay, if the background blows out, it blows out, but you've got your subject properly exposed. And so I can see that scenario, rather than fiddling around with exposure compensation and whatnot, and spending, like you say, taking 10, 12 pictures to get it right, a much easier method just to meter off their face.
That's exactly what we're talking about. That is bang. You didn't even need to listen to this episode, Adam.
No, I'm one episode ahead.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, like, well, up until now, that's probably all you've ever done is had this sort of memorizing different scenarios.
Right.
But, okay, we're at the playground. That's a minus one automatic.
Right.
You know, so great. So you could probably get a little bit closer with partial metering just because it's more specific.
Yeah.
Center weighted might help you out. But then again, like you said earlier, you're going to leave the variables up to the camera. And so with your spot metering, the key there is to be very, very specific about what you pointed at and know where. Get the idea in the future here is to get to know where certain tones are going to fall within your frame. So like if you're looking at, like, for instance, the picture of my gate, you know, well, that's not my gate, but my gate photo.
Right.
You know that if I, you know that the white sign isn't going to be at zero and the dark fence at minus one third. You know is going to be a much larger spread there.
Right.
So before you start shooting, you can anticipate that, okay, that black gate's probably going to be at minus one and one third or minus one and two thirds stops. That's where it's going to be.
Yeah.
So that's what you can use spot metering for, is to be very specific in your scene and go, okay, now I know. So there you go, Adam.
Wow. That's a lot of information.
That's the metering modes. Well, hopefully we can filter two of them out and just use two of them.
Yes.
But if not, I'd like to hear how people are using them successfully, the center weighted and the partial. So next week's challenge, I got one.
Okay. I'm super excited.
You've kind of already stepped on the punchline of this one.
Okay. It's so, the same thing.
It's the exact same thing. No, it's go down and hide in the bushes at the dike again.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. That's always a good start. Next week's challenge is, again, using the spot meter. You're going to properly place a skin tone using the spot meter.
What do you mean when you say properly place? Get it correct? Get the exposure correct?
Well, you tell me.
I don't know.
You
that's
just
your
said
wording.
It with being at the playground on an overcast day, you just said, I want to expose for the face, and if the rest blows out, the rest blows out.
Okay, so that's what you mean.
So that's exactly what we're going to do, is we're going to go out and do that this week, is we're going to have a scene, whether it's lit. I don't know. You can decide if you want to use a flash. I don't care. P.S., using a flash will be way harder in this scenario.
Okay.
But, so set up a scene. It should be a nice scene. Maybe it's a portrait. Maybe it's just a candid. But set it up and make sure you specifically go and decide where that skin tone is going to land.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have any hints for how to do that?
I do.
I mean, you talk about it after.
No,
after
I'll give you a hint right now. I'm not going to tell you where to put the skin tone, but it depends who you shoot. If you shoot people with darker skin, it's not gonna be in the same range as people with lighter skin.
Okay.
But here's my best tip is to get in close. Before you line up the shot, meter it, walk in as close as you can and get your camera right at the person's skin tone and meter that way.
Get a more accurate reading?
Yep. Get right in close to them, and that way there's nothing else. Like, so your spot is basically filling with their skin tone. Now,
right,
be careful that you don't cause a shadow on them or get in the way of the light that's normally there.
Okay.
But that's what you want to do. And it always freaks people out, too. They always think, wow, why are you taking the picture that close? But you're not. You're just getting metered.
Okay.
Okay.
You've been metered.
You should have business cards that say that. Just hand them out when you're done.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's great. Thanks for the tips.
I don't know if I would do this down at the dike.
No. It might be a little awkward.
I'd skip that one. So that's it. Until next week, where can people find your photos?
SchwartzChronicles.com. That's the place.
As always.
And what about your stuff?
As always, at AlanAttridge.com. And all of our stuff is at twohosers.com. If you want to find our Twitter, our Flickr, our Google+, our, I don't know, what else is there?
That's it, I think.
There's a bunch of stuff. The blog's on there. Anything you want to know is at twohosers.com. So until next week, get out there and make better photos.